Coming up, we're going to have some reaction to news that the Donegal-Dublin flight could fall foul of the Dublin Airport passenger cap for commercial reasons, because it's non-profit making. And also TV chef Nevin Maguire is going to be joining us as well. That's just a couple of things coming up in the next wee while. But some of your comments here, I'm so angry listening to the lady talking about how paid civil servants changed paperwork. How dare they? People paying for their own engineer, and it's changed. It's worse when you think it's not even their money they're trying to save. God knows how many things have been done on that, had serious effects on families over the years. People do not trust our government or civil servants anymore, because they have been proven to spend people's money with no regard whatsoever. Now, civil servants is a catch-all. There's many thousands of civil servants that are plugging away and working very, very hard, but I know what you're talking about there. Hi, Greg. I have a neighbour living beside me, and he has just knocked down his house. He's living in a mobile home with his wife and three children, and that man is almost out €40,000 of his own money. It's an absolute disgrace. And the money this government has wasted, and they bother the poor people is going through to get their homes rebuilt. I hope to God this government is wiped out in November. Another, I cannot begin to put myself in the defective concrete people's shoes. How they carry on their daily work, looking after family, going to work, making dinners, and have this to do with beggars believe it's a national crisis. But unfortunately, nationally, the view is that it's all sorted. Hi, Greg. Great show. Thank you. How can the council housing agency use an engineer who originally was independent and employed by homeowners now work for an agency? It's like letting a fox look after the chickens. Referring to the alteration of the engineer's recommendations as a minor glitch is not acceptable. There has to be some sort of inquiry to establish who or what was behind this glitch. Reverting back to original estimate shows that they were caught out by the ditch, and this is a face-saving exercise. Someone in the council oversaw this and must be named. And the ditch are doing fantastic work in exposing this. We do our bit as well, but really behind it all, there's hard-working people in the campaign that's rooting out this information. Let me see. Okay, I've read that one. On Ballyhone, again, this is the battery factory or the battery storage facility up in Ballyhone. If the developers and the ESB were truly interested in investing in the area, they would place these units around the windmills and not on a speculative site where they just want the cheapest solution to maximise profit. Don't forget that without proper trials, European and Irish standards and legislation to check all these systems, we get problems. We had mica, where they ignored standards, and thalidomide, where without proper impact trials before rollout, it created the fallout and impact on families we now have. The developer is the only one saying the system is safe and without effective expert support, this caller believes. Do we have competent experts or legislation or standards to reference to make an informed decision on this, and only giving locals and planning 5 weeks to review for such a large complex development? I would very much like to speak to someone from that company to very politely put a lot of these questions to them. Why were these not placed near the windmills, asks the caller, and keep it all in the one area? Untried and untested, so we are the trial. Not acceptable, they believe. Am I the only one who cannot understand why these defective block homeowners are getting over €400,000 to build a house and are not happy? Well, you see, this is the problem, and this is why there's... This is why it can be so frustrating for those affected by this crisis. There's not an awful lot of people getting over 400,000. That's the maximum. That's the limit of the grant. There's very people aren't being handed 420 grand left, right and centre, you know, and saying, look, build that. And they go, well, I can't build my mansion for that. Hey, I need more than 420. That's not really how it works, because the property is... the grant is based on... Is it square meter would be the way you'd describe it. So many people are short of that, but then still have more they have to pay themselves. So everyone's not getting over 400 grand. And that's unfortunate that view's out there, because it misrepresents what people are going through. They go on to say, my daughter recently built a four-bedroomed house for a lot less and sits unfinished because she can't afford to finish it. These families are not building like for like and are demanding new. Why not use a lot of the materials already in their homes? Yep. I understand you're coming from a personal perspective from that, because you're seeing your daughter's house, it's not finished and she can't afford to finish it. But these people are being asked to potentially rebuild their homes, and it's not their fault. It's like if your daughter now was told, oh, by the way, see that house you built so far that you can't afford to finish, but you probably borrowed against through no fault of your own. It's a big pile of crap. you would then all of a sudden go, ah, right, okay, maybe this scheme, I need to look into the scheme and maybe it's not fair. But not a, people are getting a payment per square meter, and it's often much shorter than the 420, but also much less than is required to finish the house. So I think I've explained that correctly. If anyone, if I've got it wrong, let me know. Right. It took us 2 years to get an answer about DCB. Our house now needs demolished. We have no portal in the council to upload our report to. We're on the old scheme and our paperwork won't be accepted as we've no portal to upload our documents. That's something that might need to be checked into there. Just last one before the break. What happened to the story about the Russian spy in the Oireachtas? It went nowhere, but the story in and of itself was... I'm not saying it was not true, but it was kind of speculative, and it's like, I heard this and someone confirmed it, and that person might... They need to, whoever it is needs to be named if it is a case that they're on the Russian payroll. But it's pittered out a little bit now. I think Eamon Ryan yesterday said that the person should be named because it's casting a shadow over every TD who it isn't. But anyway. All right, let's take a quick break. Back shortly. So Eastire carried a story a couple of weeks ago from the chief executive, the executive chairman, in fact, of Emerald Airlines. He effectively said that the Dublin-Donegal-Donegal-Dublin route could be lost because they have to make commercial decisions due to the passenger cap at Dublin Airport, and it doesn't make money, and PSOs are included in that cap, and Donegal, as I say, Donegal-Dublin, because it's commercial and it's not money-making, even though they get a subsidy from all of us here, that it could be removed. And I thought, well, the thing that bothered me is it was said in such passing without maybe considering the devastating implications this might have for people and for the airport and for the region. Mary Coles, coordinator of Donegal Cancer Flights, and is with me now. Thanks for taking the call this morning, Mary.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
I'm doing good. What's your reaction to this? I'm sure you haven't heard it for the first time, but what impact might this have on us here, particularly in terms of the Donegal Cancer Flights, if they made the commercial decision to remove the Donegal Dublin flight so they could fly more high-value passengers in from outside the country?
Well, I think, Greg, this is an essential service. It's the only PSO left in the country, I really think this should not be affected by this exemption. There is so many cancer patients availing of the flights. Every now and again, for statistics, we have a count of how many people are availing of our service, and at the moment, there's about 430 people who have and are still currently using our service to go up and down to Dublin for diagnosis and treatment. And it would just have a devastating effect.
You talk of the 400 cancer patients, but there are those that travel with them to support them and care for them as well.
There
so
are,
that number is much greater.
It's much greater. It's much greater. And it's not even that they fly to Dublin. We have some patients who actually fly to Dublin, connect to a flight abroad for treatment that is not available in Ireland. So this would impact on a lot of patients, and a lot of patients wouldn't actually make their appointments because they wouldn't be well enough to travel by car. The journey would be too much for them.
Yes.
So this is the only way that we can get them to Dublin and use the assistance service in Dublin and make sure that they get directly to the hospital, back to the airport and back safely to Donegal.
And I would say there are people that probably would opt against treatment rather than face that journey by road.
And we find that, and especially since we started even using the community car on the road, there were people that weren't making their appointments because from Donegal, there isn't to many parts of the country, there isn't a direct service. So a lot of people would not make their appointments in Dublin. There are some people that we will travel to Dublin with because they're not well enough to travel by themselves. So this is what we call an essential service. if this is taken away, it would have a devastating effect on not just people of this area. We have patients from Ardara, Letterkenny, Dunfanaghy, further afield.
I'm glad you made that point, because I'm glad you made that point, Mary, because I was going to ask you about that. For those who've not availed of this service or don't understand it, they might think this is something that helps people within a 1 mile radius of the airport. It's simply not the case. You offer these flights and these supports for people from all over the county.
Yes, all over the county, and also we provide this service for children who are currently going through treatment and children with life-limiting illnesses or long-term illnesses. So it's not just cancer patients. We offer this out to children as well that need to go to Dublin for regular appointments.
The issue I have with this, personally speaking, and maybe others share it, is that this PSO, this service is being used as a pawn in a wider argument here, because Emerald Airlines want PSOs to be excluded from the passenger cap and are not afraid to say and come on the radio station in the backyard of the airport to say that this would be considered as non-commercial and could potentially be the first to go. It doesn't talk to the human impact of that. And that's what really bothered me about this is, and maybe the executive chairman of Emerald Airlines doesn't understand that, or maybe the airline doesn't feel it's their responsibility to be a transport service for sick people. But I just would like in this conversation for your organisation and the 430 cancer patients that use it, for them actually to be considered that this is not about an argument to get cheaper flights at Christmas for Aer Lingus and Ryanair. This is about people's lives and outcomes and a service that's provided to us because we don't have the services provided to us in our area.
And that's it. And this argument has to be made, and it has to be made very strongly. Unfortunately, when you look at airlines, it's all about making money. They don't look at the people. They don't look at the effect it's going to have on people that need this service to survive, to go to Dublin, to get their treatment, to be looked after. You know, somewhere we're going to have a seat at the table, and we're going to have to make a very strong case that we do not lose this service from Donegal to Dublin.
And I don't know if it's up to the airline or it's up to local politicians to get some clarity on this, but whatever the to-in and fro-in between airlines and the government over the passenger cap at Dublin Airport, this needs to be decoupled from it. Because I would hate to think that someone might opt against treatment or make some other decision because they don't know that this service is going to be there in a month or 2 months or 3 months' time. So this, as far as I'm concerned, I'm not sure what you think, Mary, this needs to be clarified and taken off the table straight away so people have certainty about what services are available to them.
Absolutely. And it shouldn't be on, you know, we should not have somebody making just an ad hoc comment about this when this service is so essential to people that are ill in Donegal and that would not make their appointments in Dublin. I think, you know, somewhere along the line, somebody needs to sit down. And I have tried to contact the politicians this morning to say, what do you know about this so far?
Well, what have you done about it so far?
Yeah. Because we need to make sure. I can't have so many patients go to call us now to say, well, we need an appointment next week. Do you know, is there going to be a service next week?
We need to take this off the table. It needs to be taken. Find other ways because, you know, and I'll quote the executive chairman of Emerald Airlines, Conor McCarthy, said that if the airline has to cut its passenger numbers through Dublin Airport, then the Donegal service will have to be reviewed in a purely commercial manner. Now, we're not talking commercial. Now, it's very possible he's not aware that this is such a busy service for cancer patients. I'll give him the benefit of the doubt and allow them maybe to review that statement. But it's certainly something we're pursuing with Emerald Airlines because, as I say, the people need reassurance and this needs to be decoupled from the wider argument and taken off the table, in my view, Mary. And I'm entitled to make that view known. in case it upsets anyone. All right. And by the way, Mary, I know that you work incredibly, incredibly hard through fundraising and all the stuff you guys do behind the scenes to offer this fantastic service for these patients. Is there anything upcoming or that you need any to plug or anything you want to say just to try and help support this service, Mary?
Do you know what, Greg? It's lovely because yesterday, just delivered outside the centre, is our community bus.
Oh, go on.
Brand
lovely.
New, beautiful wow. bus, not even launched yet, and we will have that coming up. And can I just express my biggest thank you to all the people out there that are fundraising for us. We would not have this bus. We would not have this car. We would not be able to provide all these flights without the community. This is a ground-up charity. And it is the people, the community out there that is helping us to keep this charity going. And I cannot stress that enough.
All right. Keep up the great work, Marion. We're going to use our offices as much as we can to try and get certainty and clarity about the future of this service. In terms of the numbers... It doesn't make sense, and I just don't want such an important service to be used as a pawn in a wider argument, really, about the commercial viability of airlines, because they want to bring in an extra 5 million passengers than they have currently. I'll move it from 25 to 40 million. You know what I mean? We're talking about a relatively small amount of people and their outcomes and their lives, and the only way, really, often they can access these cancer services. So we're going to pursue this, Mary. I'm sure you will as well. And I just hope some politician with influence takes up the baton on this one. Take care. Mary Cole, coordinator of Donegal Cancer Flights there. Okay, we welcome back onto the show chef and author Nevin Maguire. Hi, Nevin. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg. How are you today?
Good to have you back on the program. And you're busy, aren't you? Plenty of irons in the fire. One, which I'm not allowed to talk about, which is an exciting thing coming up in a couple of weeks. And also to the show tonight. Before we get into the show, though, I did notice some quotes from you on the impact of not reducing the VAT rate on, you know, food-led businesses. You're concerned, are you, about the future viability of many businesses in the absence of that VAT reduction?
Yeah, I think it's a very fragile time within our industry, to be honest with you. Going around the country, like, there's never been a better time to experience great food, good cooking, lovely experiences, but by God, it's tough out there with challenges. And I think last week with the budget, it really was a sucker blow for a lot of businesses. It's really tough out there, Greg, and I feel it, and I'm chatting to a lot of people. I suppose we have a very unique model in Black Lion. We're open 35 years, employing 60 staff. Without the bedrooms, we would not survive, to be truthful. We have 20 bedrooms, so without that. So it definitely is a challenge in time. And there's so much goodness out there in food and hospitality. And just, yeah, it's definitely difficult now. Definitely,
yeah, my concern is that there would have been some businesses that would have been sitting waiting on the budget before they decided what to do. Could they face another winter? You know, in the hope of getting back through to a busy time again. I just would be fearful that we might see a raft of people making that call now just because this provision wasn't in the budget.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. I think there was a lot of people holding out and just waiting for it to see would they do something. And even if they were to compromise and do a little bit, like, it's about a give and take. You know, small business, a small enterprise, like, it's very unfair when a small coffee shop is in the same bracket of a hotel or a big kind of like a chain of restaurants. You know, like, that's very difficult for businesses. So is Greg. Mm-hmm. I think it's going to be really difficult now, maybe a couple of months ahead. And with the Restaurant Association, I'm a member of, they say it's very challenging out there. It really is.
Yeah. And you know, you've referenced the bedrooms there. And I can understand, because of maybe, you know, dynamic pricing and gouging a little bit that goes on in certain types of businesses, you know, hotels, for an example, in certain places. It's not fair. It makes it very difficult because you, even in a town like Donegal Town, for an example, you do have a hotel with a restaurant, and next door you've got a restaurant, and the hotel has the rooms to compete with the restaurant. I just don't understand why we couldn't have done something more nuanced, not to reward greed or whatever it might be, but actually to support the genuine businesses that you're talking of. There's those that can, that are the lifeblood of our tourism industry and the vibrancy of communities more generally speaking.
Yeah, I definitely think the model has to be changed. I think so. I don't know how easy it is or if it can be done with what you would think with technology. Like, why would a small family-run coffee shop or small family-run business be thrown into the same pot as a hotel? And you're absolutely right. In fairness, Greg, I mean, like, I go around the country a lot and I still think there's good value in Ireland. Mm. We're not cheap, but I think the quality of food and the hospitality is still right up there with a lot of places I've been to. I've just recently finished a trip, literally 2 weeks ago. We'll talk about the programme in Donegal at the minute, but in Ulster. And there's a lot of exciting things happening in Ulster, which sometimes is a little bit forgotten about. I'm a proud Ulster man. Mm-hmm. I love where I come from. I'm proud of being from Cavan. But even in Donegal and up the Antrim coast, and it's just, you know, it's definitely difficult, but there's some exciting stuff now. Like when I started cooking, like, I wouldn't have known what a food truck was. Now it's part and parcel of the way people might maybe go out and treat themselves, and you see a lot of innovation and creativity. So there's a lot of exciting stuff happening there. And tonight, obviously, we're in Donegal, one of my favourite counties up the road. So I'm really looking forward.
And it's part of Nevin's Coastal Food Trails. It begins this evening, Wednesday, the 9th of October. A great time slot too for your RTE1 at 8 p.m. And the food trail suggests you're going to be in many places, but Donegal features tonight, Nevin. So tell us a little bit about the show, what you're looking what you're getting across, and I suppose to what we'll see about Donegal.
Yeah, and I suppose the whole show, Greg, to be honest with you, was showing the coastal towns. Like, we have so much to offer, and I mean, going all over the country, you know. The first show was in Greystones, tonight's Donegal, next week then is down in the Burren in County Clare. There's so much. I suppose when I look at the way food and people's palates have changed, like the offering that we have, it's exciting. So we go into maybe a food truck, we go into a restaurant, we go into a coffee shop, we go into a producer, but tonight's all about Donegal, and we're going to talk about that in a minute. And there's so much really exciting stuff happening. So went up to Killy Beggs, to Anderson's, and Gary Anderson there, the Boathouse restaurant, and he does a beautiful seafood dish. Now, I know Gary well. I've met him on my travels over the years, and of course his wife, I recorded with her in the seafood shack, Mairead, there. Donegal, like, that's where I get my fish. I mean, there's so much. It's great to see more and more people eating and enjoying fish, because we're an island. I mean, like, why not use it and enjoy it? So he does a beautiful, beautiful seafood dish tonight, and just shows how simple it is. Prawns, a lovely bisque, full of flavour, and a lovely restaurant. It was my first time to be there, but his food was delicious.
And where are you in Donegal Town?
Donegal Town, them Loch Esk. So I went to Loch Esk, fantastic. Probably Donegal Town, when you think of it, has probably of the best hotels in Ireland, Loch Esk, and then, of course, Harvey's Point. Two very different but iconic hotels. So Loch Esk, I was cooking there with the chef. He done a beautiful, he's a Spanish chef working there, and he done a lovely Silver Hill duck with different textures of juniperi, orange gel, very innovative food. And we actually ate there as the crew, with the crew. I was really impressed with the food offering, the hospitality, the breakfast. It was an excellent experience. And we recorded Greg last September, so it's nearly a year old, but it was just a wonderful experience. And then I went to Chapur Indian restaurant. And this is really interesting, because this is probably one of the most successful award-winning restaurants in Ireland.
Yeah, it's remarkable, isn't it? The accolades, it's not remarkable if you've eaten there, but it's amazing how successful it's been on a national scale.
Well, I have met them at Donegal Food Festival over the years, but just to go there and see them cook and see the way how authentic they were with their spices, Greg, and it just makes me realise how the Irish palate has changed. It's embraced lots of different food offerings, food cultures, and that Indian is one of the best I've ever been to. It was fantastic. Mm. He was such a beautiful, kind man. The head chef there, he cooks a railway curry, which is one of their signature dishes, with lamb, which was so tasty. And then back in Donegal, then Finnegan's Preserves. Now, this is a really interesting. Jerry was a gentleman. He's a general manager there. And he showed me how to make this kind of like a tomato katsu curry, which is a really, or chutney, which is a really interesting chutney, so it is, but using really good ingredients and a lot of spices. So they're a very interesting company, Finnegan's. I was well impressed with their range of products, and I thought the quality was excellent, to be honest with you.
Yep, Sleafley Distillery too is another popular stop on the trail up here. Did you call in there?
I certainly did. And we done a whiskey tasting, and I'm by no way an expert in whiskey tasting, but it was a lot of fun. And it just shows the excitement and innovation and that, you know, Sleag Leap, like, what an amazing experience. I was up there over the summer, got the famous lobster roll, and then we got doing a whiskey tasting. So we did, but it was absolutely fantastic. James Doherty is the managing director, and he had me tasting different whiskies and telling me about them and that. And you know, the amount of, look, I was in Donegal recently, Greg, about maybe 3 weeks ago doing the Ulster food trails. I couldn't get over how many Americans were there.
Yeah.
I'm so happy to see it busy, vibrant. It's only less than an hour for me. We get a lot of customers to the restaurant, and it seemed to be really buzzing, which I was really happy about. It was great to see.
And also, too, which can't be underestimated, is the positive impact this has in terms of visiting. Do you know, because it's not just you talking about the great offerings that we have from food perspectives or whatever it might be, but these shows also include a lot of the great scenery, and the county always looks fantastic. And someone's sitting somewhere in a front room down the country, and they go, do you know what? We need to head up there. And that's not really measurable, I don't think, but it's definitely it's hard to measure how the impact it has, but we know it's impactful. And obviously this last week it was a different area, this week it's Donegal, and on it goes. But it's also a fantastic marketing tool, I think, for the region. That's a great byproduct of all this.
Well, you know what, you're lucky in Donegal because you have one of the most beautiful counties. You think of all the amazing beaches and the different places, and it is a big county. Let's remind us, you have the whole Inishowen Peninsula. Like, we only kind of scratch the surface of it, but it's a fabulous part of the world. And what I've noticed, Greg, with my food trails, that a lot of people follow where I go to. I do get a lot of people messaging. And customers saying in the restaurant, we'll go there, we're going to go to Donegal. For the first episode, I had people saying they went to Greystones, they had the galette, the creperie, they had the pizza. So there's definitely a little bit of a, I wouldn't say a cult following, maybe that's been a bit, but there's a lovely feedback from the
customer.
Well,
they trust you in that. And they know that if you go up and say something is particular. I'm fascinated by this railway curry. I'm so hungry. I haven't really listened to a word you've said since you talked about a lamb railway curry. So I'll watch on with interest this evening, Nevin. So the show focusing on our part of the world here is on tonight at 8 p.m. Last week's show, I'm sure, is available on the RTE player. And next Wednesday, where are you?
Next Wednesday, I finish up. This is the last programme. It's in County Clare, the beautiful Burren. And, you know, it's great to see different parts of the country from north, south, east, west, and just to see what the food offering and, as you say, a bit of the scenery. But it's all about travels, trails, and just exploring what's really good about our country, because there is such a lot of positive stuff happening. Let's get that message out there and
just
help them. Yeah, of course.
So. Listen, thanks very much, Nevin.
Thank you soon.
See you soon. All right, buddy. Thanks very much, Nevin Maguire there. Chef and author, and that show focusing on Donegal Airs tonight, Killybegs, Donegal Town, Loch Esk. An interesting mix of different types of foods there. All, I am sure, absolutely delicious. So caller says, I used to go out for lunch with the family all the time. It started at €15. It's now €30 to €33. Sure, a family of four could not afford that on a regular basis. Sunday was my mammy day off cooking, but it's just too much now. Our restaurants pricing themselves out of the market. And that's the point. And I didn't want to over-focus on it with Nevin because obviously he wants to talk about the show this evening. We've all changed our habits in when we go out. And I feel for the businesses because they're looking at their menus, right? And there's an awful lot of overheads. Power, wages, you know, the products and all that kind of stuff. And they know that there is a price point that we won't pay a breakfast for. I think people sort of, 10 used to be the mark for a breakfast, but I think, you know, like a full Irish. I know it's not a la carte or anything, but there's a point where you won't pay for a breakfast. What is it, 13, 14, 15? So they have to price in where people stop paying for it. For lunch, as you say, for lunch. So you go out for lunch and you want a chicken melt or something or whatever it might be. And they're not gouging. They wouldn't be closing down if they were ripping the public off. I think we can put that to bed, right? So what's the max you'll pay for lunch? €15, €16 as a treat. You know what I mean? If you're going out for a proper lunch, sit down and all that type of stuff. And then for a main, you know, how much would you pay for a steak? You know, steak would, I remember steak €15, €18. Now it's €22, €28, €32. I mean, a mum and dad to stop one having to cook on a Sunday going to go out and pay £60 for a steak, although it being beautiful. But the restaurants do have to push up their prices to make money or else they wouldn't be closing, right? There comes a point where we won't pay it as consumers. We'll do something else. I'd love to be able to afford to dine out at Nevin's establishment. Yeah, it's top end, no doubt about that. Just back from Malaga, 10-ounce steak, all the trimmings, $14.50, 27 or 32 euro in Donegal, but you have to look at the cost of electricity there, the business rates, the water rates, the wages, the minimum wage here, the energy costs with the highest energy prices in the world. We can't compete because the operating costs in Malaga are so much cheaper. That sounds delicious, though. Please ask Nevin to clarify the correct way to cook burgers. Can they be served rare as advertised in the Irish Farmers Journal cookery page? I wouldn't serve them rare, personally. I'm not a chef. But if you look at a steak is sealed. The outer part of the steak is sealed. You look at it. The internal meat is not exposed to germs as such. And cooking, you cook the outside of a steak. The inside is protected by the outside of the steak. So you cook that, you can have that rare. You mince. All of that meat is exposed. All of it. At some point or other, potentially. And then you cook that. If that's in any way rare, I'm afraid you're going for toilet roll. I wouldn't be eating it. I wouldn't risk that anyway. My burger, no redness in the burger because that meat is not insulated like the red meat within a steak, if that makes sense. But I could be wrong. I'm sure there's a chef listening that's going to tell me I'm wrong, maybe. Councillor Michael McBride is with me on the show now. He's moved an emergency motion that Letterkenny Milford Municipal District seek a meeting with the HSE regarding the opening hours and staffing at the respite centre in Ballymacool. Thanks for joining us, Councillor. I appreciate your time.
You're very welcome and good morning, Greg and listeners.
Good morning to you. Right, so what's piqued these concerns, Michael? What's happened?
Well, I suppose it was brought to my attention by service users, Greg, that the hours, have been severely reduced out at the centre in Ballymacool. And as far as I'm concerned, the people who are service users out in the respite centre at Ballymacool are people who care for, their loved ones. It's basically 7/24 care, and maybe three or four times a year they get the opportunity to get a few days that they can maybe take a break and get away and recharge the batteries to come back and do the job that they're so dedicated to. And recently, it has been brought to my attention that families have been notified the day before they had some people booked in there that they weren't going to be able to use the facility because they didn't have the staff for to provide the service. And as far as I'm concerned, that's absolutely unacceptable.
All right, so we understand two staff members have retired. I presume they gave some notice. What was done to try and replace them, to go through the recruitment process whilst they were still in situ, to hire new staff to ensure continuance of service? Do we know what the HAC did to try and eliminate any gap in service?
Well, Greg, I suppose that's what I understand, that there was two members of staff retired there, and I believe also, that there was other members of staff that were there who were happy enough, they were looking for full-time contract, and that wasn't forthcoming, so they decided to move on and do something else for their life. Now, we know that there's a recruitment embargo in the HSE, but, the thing about this is, this service is so important to the people that are using it, that, the HSE should have people in place for to replace anybody that is leaving, especially when they know they're retiring. And that's why yesterday I put it in as an emergency motion. I want to get to the bottom of it to find out why there hasn't been staff recruited to replace the staff that left, because that centre needs to be operating at full potential.
I understand you might not have the answer to this question, Michael, but we've spoken about respite services in other areas of the county not being available. And in Inishowen, for an example, and it was mentioned in passing that some families were offered respite in Letterkenny, but it didn't suit them. Would that have been at this facility when it was fully staffed, I wonder, or are there other respite services in the town?
Well, I understand that, there are people from, different parts of the county using that.
Right, okay, so it is the same service then. Okay, so the implications go beyond Letterkenny.
Yeah, and I mean, at the end of the day, these services are not plentiful. they're fairly limited. So, you know, I think the HSE has really let down the service users in this situation. That's why I asked yesterday that through the office of the mayor that we would ask the HSE to come and meet us and go through the whole thing that has happened out there in Ballymacool, and that we would get a plan put in place where they have it back up, opening and running at full potential, because as far as I'm concerned, it's absolutely unacceptable. And the mayor himself, who sits on the regional health forum, the SEALTA group, you know, he said that he has raised this as well, you know, at the meetings in Galway. So we have to put on as much, all we can do as councillors is exert as much pressure as we possibly can, and using the medium of the press for to do it, because the SEALTA group don't seem to be serious about these centres, and it's unbelievable what they mean to the people who use them.
It's crazy, this. The families just need a break from time to time for their own well-being, the people, and to be able to continue their care. And it has to be said that these people are accidental carers in an awful lot of the case, are saving the state billions and billions of euro. And the very least we can do for them is to have facilities, not just in Letterkenny, but in Inishowen, West Donegal, South Donegal, where they can get a break, where they can maybe focus on another of the member of the family that they might be concerned they're neglecting, whatever it might be. This is crazy that we're constantly having to fight these battles for basic services.
That's correct, Greg. And, you know, when you sit down and talk to the people, this is only one of the services that they need and require that they're fighting for. You know, there's several, you know, and they'll all tell you that everything that they want for the support, keeping their loved ones and their home, they look after them 7/24, they'll tell you they have to fight tooth and nail for every other service that they need for to support them and keeping their people, you know, their loved ones at home. So, you know, I think there needs to be a complete review of that whole sector, and, you know, that the services need to get the resources that it needs for to make sure that these people have the supports that they need
I just wonder, down the country, are they using private services more? I mean, because I'm reminded once again of the home care packages and what have you, where, you know, private individuals or companies are used to make sure no one's waiting, where here in Donegal we seem to want to do it internally, and then we have all these issues when it comes to staffing. So just to be clear as possible, and I know you're trying to acquire information at this point, what do we know about Ballymacool House at the moment? Is it open? Like, is it open all the days it's supposed to be open, but with a reduced service? Is it only open a certain amount of days? Do we know what the situation, the impact of these staffing reductions has actually had in terms of the opening hours at this point, Michael?
It's not open full-time, Greg. But what I do understand from the people that I've been speaking to is that it's open whenever they have the staff for to open it. And, I mean, that is totally unacceptable. The staff need to be there to provide a full service for the users.
Right. As I suspected, this has happened because forewarning wasn't heeded and things, feet were dragged. Leonard Watson's a CDNT parents representative. Leonard, you have some more information on this as to how there seems to have been a missed opportunity for continuance of service here. What do you know?
Greg, you know, as you know, I've been fighting for this now this last couple of years. I would have met with the Minister of Disabilities in June, along with the Head of Disabilities from the HSE. There was an undertaking that the Ballymacool would go to 7 days a week. I asked the question, how soon can we start recruiting? And the minister said straight away. At the same meeting, I brought up about Riverwalk and Cairn Donagh. Now, the story around Riverwalk and Cairn Donagh, it closed 4 years ago due to two patients needing somewhere to live. But that's 4 years now. And as I, like, Greg, I've been around all the politicians, as soon as to Michael, I know he's pushing it today, but I've been around all the politicians.
Yeah, I know that. Yep.
We have built a brand new school for the Angels that's nearly open, and we have nearly a hospital built, and we can't open a house in Cairn Donagh that's already built to provide this service. To me, we're getting the runaround. We were told at a meeting in February it'll be open in May. Then there was an issue around the nurse. But again, we were kind of told that they were pushing for September. And in fairness, that meeting, the minister did say something, and I thought she was right. She said, let's try and get this open even 2 or 3 days a week. Let's get the service up and going.
This is the Riverwalk in Cairn Donagh.
Yes, Riverwalk and Cairndonna. And this, the whole issue is, Greg, everybody in Cairndonna and in Babbleth, they all now are coming to the service in Letterkenny. And you know, these people deserve their services.
But in terms of when you spoke to the minister, how many days a week was Ballyrain open?
Ballymacool was a six-day service at that stage.
And it's reduced now?
Greg, you know, again, I've been chatting about this here. There was a staff member left in January. There was a staff member left in May. Now, and just a bit of context on the one left in May. That person was there 2.5 years, was on a 3-month rolling contract.
Yeah.
And had told them the year before, if I don't get a full-time position, I'm leaving. Now, listen, nobody's entitled to it. But the fact then, 3 weeks after he handed in his notice, they offered him a full-time position. Left. Now, what I'm saying, we've got people who are willing to work with people with severe challenges, work nights, you know, weekends, and that, and we're not keeping them on the system. Like, and that's it's so frustrating. Even the staff out there, like, I would know the staff in Ballymacool, like, they are the best staff around. Like, but again, you get to a stage where you just think, I don't need this. Like, you know, they're just the pin to their collar. Like, you know, I know at the moment there's 3.5 staff, full-time staff members down out there. And they will say now they're using agency staff out there, but that is not full-time staff, because people with complex needs usually see, it's better to see the same people over and over.
Yeah,
like,
we know that. But
so you don't need a huge turn.
Are they actively recruiting, as far as you are aware, to have the respite centre in Ballymacool fully staffed and open 7 days a week? You were given that commitment by the minister.
As I say, I was told in June, the minister said, go. Yeah, but Greg, do you know what? To me, there is something going on with respite in Donegal. I don't think there's a commitment at all. We just seem to be dragging on. We have been meeting the politicians. I know Michael met me at some of them meetings too, with the HSE for nearly 18 months now. And there was commitments made at all the meetings. Yes, Riverwalk 100% is opening up. We got the answer back to my letter. Sorry, actually, I wrote to the minister. I wrote to the head of disabilities in July. He asked where all this was at. I got no answer. Now, I got an answer back to say the person was on leave. Park McLaughlin contacted me to see was something happening. I told him, I wrote to the head of disabilities. He said, be gone, send me on the letter. I sent it on to him. He resent the letter to the person. They answered the letter back to him. I still, to this day, have not had a letter back to say what's going on.
Right, okay.
You know, at the end of the day, we're parent reps for CDNT, but, you know, but respite, all that comes under it for us. Like, you know, at the end of the day, it's services for families that really need help. Like,
what do we do, though, Leonard? Right, we're talking about it, and we're going around in circles to some extent, not you and me, but, you know, you're doing everything you can as a CDNT parent rep. I know there are other parents and carers making all the efforts they can. But in just 30 seconds, what's next? How do we get the message home that this is not good enough, that Donegal needs proper respite services? What do we do next?
Greg, there has to be a will. There has to be a will. You know, at the end of the day, if this is an emergency, like, if, and in the case of emergency, this could be sorted out in a couple of months. Like, it's no different to the base for the East. Like, you know, again, as parents, if we've come forward with solutions to get there, and they're just being knocked back. That premises doesn't suit. This doesn't suit.
Okay, yeah. So there needs to be.
All the politicians, we all have to put pressure on the HSE that this service has to be reinstated 7 days a week, and Cairndonna has to be open too. Like.
Okay, Leonard, thank you for your time, and also Councillor Michael McBride. I appreciate your time as well.